The Robert Scott the Bell Robert Show. The Robert
Scott Bell Show.
The voice of health, freedom, and liberty. Here's Robert Scott Bell.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Sunday Conversation edition of the Robert Scott Bell Show, scheduled to air, I believe, the 21st of April, if I'm not mistaken. And this is a time where I get to slow things down, breathe a little easier. Not that I breathe pretty intensely, but it can be intense during the live shows during the week and cover all kinds of topics. But Sundays have evolved, as you might know already, into a nice conversation, learning about people's journey, their experience. Why do they believe what they believe? How did they get there? How did they get here? And maybe there's a book associated with the topic that you might want to learn more. The idea of the Sunday Conversation is not to offend anybody's sensibilities or even challenge necessarily your belief system. That can happen organically in life at any point. But the idea is just to share the journey and the journeys that are multiple and myriad and widely different and distinct. And many times they'll cross over into areas where you go, oh, yeah, I felt that too. However this makes you, if it moves you to look into it more, the book today we'll be talking about is called Miracles, Karma and Reincarnation Redefined, a Handbook for Purposeful Living by Marion Massey. She's a friend of mine from going way back in the years back to Georgia. And I didn't know about this book until recently. It just came out. It's become a bestseller. And I want to learn about it as well as some of the backstory of her life that I don't know. So, Marion Massey to the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Well, thank you, Robert. It's great to be here. And yeah, I kind of reveal everything in my book because I feel that, like what you said, to know someone's journey helps somebody else if they have something similar.
Yeah.
You know, and the story behind this book is this is my third book. But I didn't even want to write this book. I didn't want to write any book, actually. I've always been a seeker. I always believe that everybody has their own path to God, to spirit. And as a child, I learned to listen to spirit. And I reveal a lot about that in my book. But getting down to how I wrote the book, About 25 years ago, I had a very vivid dream that said I'd be writing a couple of books to help people grow in consciousness, in more love. Mm. And in the dream, because I've never wanted to write, the dream ago, but I can't spell. How can I write a book I can't spell?
So are you talking about your memories of grade school and high school English and going, you know, I don't like this? Or was it not that bad? It's just like, well, I'm just not going to write a book. I mean, how bad was it?
No. You know, the spelling bees were, at least I was raised Catholic, and they would have, you know, the little spelling bees, and we'd all have on one side of the room, and they'd make you spell a word. And I was always the first one down. Always.
Okay, so it wasn't your top flight, interest because, you weren't excelling necessarily. I'm not saying you flunked out of English. Your English is very good, probably better than mine in speaking. But writing a book, as you said, it's a big step up, right? And
some people just want to always write a book, or they're always writing, or they have written before. And before that dream, there was no inclination at all in my life to write a book. It was always art or therapy because my background is I'm a therapist, but never writing a book. So when that dream came, I knew it was a prophetic dream because I've always studied my dreams, and it was a knowing, and I'm like, scared the poop out of me because I knew it was going to come true.
how old were you in that dream approximately? Do you remember?
Oh, about maybe 35.
Okay. So, And I'm thinking back to your growing up in Catholicism. I don't know. They didn't talk about dreams a whole lot in Catholicism, did they?
No. In my book, I talk about the whole purpose of my book. Let's start there. Is that I have always had a knack to take highly esoteric or complex spiritual theory and bring it down to daily life so that people can actually use the understanding to help their daily life on some level, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And that is the premise of this book.
And I got to ask, did you get like slapped by rulers, by nuns? That's not something they like their students to be doing. Just my cursory thoughts on that.
No, they don't. They really don't. No, and my father was extremely Catholic.
Okay.
And I'm the youngest of eight.
Did that create any conflict in childhood in the family or anything like that? I mean, there are a lot of experiences going back to childhood about, you know, our belief systems as children, as we grow and we're in a system, like we were born into maybe a family had this religion and not every one of those kids fits it. I'm just wondering, did that raise some issues?
No, I was a very aware little kid. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and I tell this story in the book. The book is filled with different stories, not just my own. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of walking one day and realizing and hearing that there is more than this life, that there is reincarnation. And the Catholic Church did not teach that. Right. And I kept that very close to my own self. And I'm the youngest of eight, and it was a very troubled childhood. I ran away from home when I was 15.
Wow.
And I went through a lot of issues. I was suicidal. I was a bulimic for 14 years. I had panic attacks, and I've overcome all of these things. And it is my relationship with spirit that helped me so.
Mm. So, yeah, being the youngest of eight, growing up in that family with kind of, it sounds like you had conscious awareness of certain things that maybe didn't fit easily into, light
I'll tell you one conversation I had with my mother. I remember, when you're like 13, you're like a little brat, and she goes, we were fighting and she goes, and I said to her, cause I realized she just could not relate to children. And I said, why did you have all these children? Mm. You obviously could not relate to them. And I'm 13. And she goes, wow. Well, if I didn't have you, you wouldn't be here. And I went, yes, I would. I'd be someplace else in another family. And wow. She went, bing, 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 bing.
Oh, my God.
That was the end of the conversation.
Okay. Well, I guess I can understand more of the thoughts of, I got to leave this place. This is not working for me early on.
Well, my mother was very, very sick. And I took over the responsibilities very young. I did, even though there was eight of us, nobody was really home except for my brother and I, because everybody was so much older. Mm. And all the responsibility of the house and the cleaning and the cooking and everything, I did at 10 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And and I was very, I grew up
fast.
Very fast.
Yeah.
I remember I said I was suicidal. And I remember when I was like 13 or 14, contemplating it kind of like, I wonder what it would be like not to be here, to end it. And I'm looking at a bunch of butcher knives. And my knowing from spirit about reincarnation, the voice from spirit, the Holy Spirit said, yes, you could take your life and you're going to have to face whatever you haven't faced, even more so if you take your life.
Wow.
So my knowing about reincarnation was like, okay, I can face this stuff now or I can face it later. And it wasn't easy leaving home, but leaving home was the option of being able to be alive and not be suicidal.
You know, what's interesting about this discussion, and we bring up the R word, some people don't like it because their belief doesn't encompass that. But as I said, roll with us. These are conversations and we learn from these experiences, is that some would say, well, if you have more than one life, then you'll take this life for granted. You won't care about it. And you'll just kill yourself and start over again. Interesting. In your case, having that knowledge for you, your message was, yeah, you could, but it'll be the same or even more intense. And you then said, okay, I'm going to stick with this. Obviously, you obviously didn't take yourself out and you said, let's go forward with this life.
Right. Part of reincarnation is what I try to teach people. And it doesn't matter what your background is or your belief. I don't try to tell you to be a different religion. I don't do that at all. But I do try to tell you how what I call the game is played, the life, is cause and effect. And hence, that is karma. Your actions create. And so I try to help people to become more conscious of that so they can become more of the captain of their ship instead of reacting or not even knowing what the heck's going on and how do I get out of it?
Hmm. Well, going back to those early years as a child, though, having this kind of, I guess, a belief system or knowledge, however you determine it, of living before, having lived before, how did that manifest? Was there a visceral, visual or auditory memory, something like a deja vu that popped up that you suddenly went, whoa, this is not the first time through? Something, because obviously it wasn't being taught from your parents or your family's religious teachings.
No, I think there are different ways of learning spiritually. I think there's, you hear, auditory, some more people are visual, and then some people are very feeling. And I'm more of auditory and feeling. And when I get messages, it is through internal feelings, nudges, and also hearing. There's a story in my book. I was about 10 years old. I mean, I really listened to spirit a lot because I was very lonely and very depressed, but I was also a very responsible little girl. And I'm sitting there doing my homework in my own little room, and my brother was home from the Marines, and he was across the hall in his room. And unbeknownst to me, he was cleaning his gun. And we always said he was like an accident waiting to happen. So he didn't think it would be good to point it outside towards the window. He thought it would be good to point it internally. I didn't know any of that was going on.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here. I hear this booming voice say, get up and get on the bed now. I mean, it yelled at me. I got up and got on the bed, and the gun went off. And if I didn't get on the bed when I did, it would have gone through my temple.
Whoa. So the voice you're hearing is not your brother warning you to get out of the way. This is something else, like a
No one heard it but me.
Okay.
And I never told anybody about this until I wrote my first book. And then my brother goes, he realized Marion's in the other room. And he goes, Marion, Marion. I mean, I could feel the bullet go through my hair.
Wow.
Into the closet. I mean, it was one of those pivotal moments when you absolutely know that there's more to this life than meets the eye. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I needed that experience and I needed to be alive. Things just don't come from spirit just because, oh, it's kind of cool. You need the experience.
But also it brings about the concept and reality of the love and protection of spirit. If you're able to pay attention and then act on it, because I've said this about folks that don't believe in anything but materialistic reductionist view of the world. If they had heard that voice, and they might not have reacted or responded the way you did.
Well, I think when you're 10 years old and you hear an app, I mean, it was so loud and so commanding. I couldn't do anything but get up and get on the bed. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was nobody yelling at me, no one voice I ever heard before.
Right.
And I knew that was spirit. Mm.
That's a powerful story. These are the stories you guys might want to read about. And I love that we get to share these stories here, as well as those that want to pick up the book. It's available on Amazon. Looks like Kindle and paperback, it says.
Yes, and by the end of the month, it will be auditory, too.
Audiobook.
Yeah, and
it's linked up in the show notes today at robertscottbell.com. It's Miracles, Karma and Reincarnation, Redefined, A Handbook for Purposeful Living. Now, from the standpoint of your early beliefs growing up in Catholicism to having a knowingness in your own life, it wasn't like you had been studying at 10 years of age this stuff, but something was prompting you, obviously, in a direction. Were there other events in your younger years as a child or as a teenager that, you know, had confirmatory or validating these experiences where someone would write off as these imaginations of a young child, right? And they try to dismiss these things. Other things that confirmed and validated that you are on the right track, and that, you know, life is a continuum beyond just this physical body we're in right now.
Right. Well, at a very early age, I would hear, this is my belief anyway, that the Holy Spirit speaks to us in sound and light, which is a combination of divine love. At that time, as a child, I did not know that, but I would, at night before I would go to bed, I would hear this loud humming sound, and it kind of scared me. But as I have grown in my awareness, I know that Spirit was talking to me at a very young age, and then that voice, and I've had different things that have happened since. But it's just, like I said, I've been a seeker for a very long time, and not taking my life when I heard what the results would have been if I did take my life, because that was an inner voice telling me that, helped me go through everything I needed to go through and come out the other end. Like, to give you an example, when I learned about sound, or working with sound as a mantra, I could never just sit there and meditate because I'd always fall asleep. So when I heard when I heard about sound, I said, well, say something I can do. Now, because of the traumas I went through as a child, I developed bulimia, which at that time no one talked about, no one knew anything about it. Yeah. And I was a severe bulimic. You know, I would be throwing up 8-10 times a day for 14 years.
Wow. That's a terminal thing. Some don't survive that.
No. And I never went to therapy. And what really healed it was working with sound. And the only reason I started working with the mantra was because I wanted to be happy. And at that time, I was a Buddhist. And I found a different mantra than what I use now. But I'd have to get to a place of feeling normal in my daily life, I would do it for like 3 hours a day, an hour and a half to 3 hours a day.
Wow.
And I did it just to get to a place of normalcy. I didn't like goal to get out of bulimia. I'd given up all hope by that time. It was 14 years into it. And
so you're in your young adult years at this point, yes?
Yes. I was in my early 20s.
Sounds like you were like becoming a Tibetan monk, though. I mean, with that kind of chanting time frame, that's a lot of chanting.
Well, I was still, you know, I was doing all the other stuff, but I was doing it just to be able to get through my day. I always wore makeup, Robert, always. So no Tibetan monk for me.
Okay. No, just the idea of chanting 3 hours a day. It's not many people that grow up in America or the West have the stamina to do something like that. So it shows that on some level, you were very committed and disciplined to practice.
Well, yes. Also, when you're desperate and there wasn't anything else that I knew, and I was getting some kind of results. And the thing happened is that after a month of doing this, the bulimia just went away.
Mm.
It's never been back. It's not like I'm a recovered bulimic. It's never been back. So another awareness for me that connecting with spirit actually changes your vibration, your consciousness, and what you do and you don't do mentally, emotionally, and physically.
Yeah.
Now I don't do it for 3 hours a day.
Okay. All right. I'm very impressed, though, at all that happened. That's, you know, the experience I had similar, you know, when I started engaging more overtly in spiritual practice and connecting with spirit, you know, it was my college years, and I've been through high school, and we met, it was Georgia, right? Atlanta area back then? Okay.
Yeah.
So, and did you grow up in the South your whole life?
No, upstate New York.
Upstate. So you came down from New York. But yeah, in Georgia, of course, if you grew up in Georgia as a high schooler, you're already drinking beer in high school. It was just, you know, what you did on weekends.
I was with you up north too, let me tell you.
You did that? Yeah.
It was a bit more than beer.
Yeah.
A little bit more than beer.
That was part of it. And of course, when I engaged more in a spiritual focus to my life, within 6 months, I believe it was, or less even. I mean, it may have been within weeks or months that the desire for alcohol fell away. Like that. Suddenly I was like, you know, one moment it was fun. The next moment I was like, I have no desire for alcohol. You know, it was so I'm kind of experiencing what you're saying in my own right, how just something can fall away, you know, for people that have been through a lot of problems. And I'm not saying it always happens, because I had to work very hard on my health to recover it. That didn't happen like miracle, you're well. I had to learn the discipline of other things. But in that case, a similar thing happened where I was just, that just dropped away. And like you said, your bulimia just dropped away. So something was shifting in terms of energy, vibration, consciousness.
Right. And I agree with you. There's other times when you have to keep working on it, maybe for years in a certain direction for something. Yeah. But because you know about the law of cause and effect, what you do creates, and how you're working with that and what level you're working with that, you will be creating something higher and better. And so it makes you feel very good about the actions that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's other things that have taken me a lot longer to let go of. But that is what I would say is another miracle for me. But there's all kinds of little miracles. But everything that we do is connected to spirit. So just mm-hmm. things, some things on this planet takes longer.
Yeah. And I don't know if I was to say there's a one size fits all either, because I think just like your experience is unique to you and mine is to everybody listening, you have your unique experiences that bring about perhaps belief systems. And if we look back on our life, we can obviously point to many times our belief systems shifted or changed. Even within our, you know, even within the same religion you're in, if you've been in there, you've probably believed differently about those things than you did before. So the very nature of experience causes us perhaps to question things or strengthen our resolve in validating things that we kind of felt, and then we can prove them to be true or accurate. I think that's some of the aspect of, you know, a belief system and an experience that validates it beyond belief. That's weird. I know what I'm saying, but it's beyond belief. And it's like, oh, I know now because of the experience I had. Now, and I say that, Marianne, it's not to convince anybody of my belief system is right and yours is wrong or vice versa. And I don't take that's what you're doing at all with your book. It's to share the experience and maybe help give explanation for people's experiences where they don't at this moment have explanation for it.
Absolutely. And I give tools to help you to become aware of what you're thinking, what may be in your subconscious, how to change your own beliefs, how to work through your emotions. I give some spiritual exercises that might resonate with you. So you can take where you're at and work where you're at to go where you want to go. But you got methods to do this.
Now, Mary,
hence the word, a handbook for, you know, purposeful living.
Nice. Did this come out of your, you say you're a therapist. Maybe you could describe a little bit more about your training, how you got into that, what aspect of that, and how that also maybe has imparted practical tips and tools for people through this book on a subject matter that may be not taught in traditional therapy schools.
Well, I'm not a traditional therapist. And mm-hmm. when I was in my 20s, I asked inwardly, when I say I ask, it's always about spirit. I asked mm-hmm. spirit, I would like to have a profession that I would always love, that I could really feel that it was my purpose. And that I would really just love. And I kept that as a focus, and I wanted to work with people and definitely not numbers, you know, mm-hmm. not good with that. Even worse with numbers than I am with spelling. But so after keeping that gently in my mind and doing everything I could outwardly to kind of find what that would be, I had a random conversation with somebody about 35 years ago about hypnotherapy. Now, 35 years ago in the Deep South, hypnotherapy was not known. Hypnotherapy and coaching was not known. And I went, oh, wow, what is that? And it just went wink. And there happened to have been a clinical hypnotherapy school in Atlanta at the time. And when I went there, it just resonated with me. And I was, you know, making money right from the get-go by doing it because it just fit me. I always believed in changing your subconscious mind. I read about that when I was also in grade school. So it worked really well. It encompassed everything I believed in. and I was able to help people from a different perspective than just traditional therapy. And I'm for any therapy that works. It's just I'm not a traditional therapist. Mm-hmm. And now they call me a success coach. You know, life coach.
Hypnotherapy in the Deep South, they look at you with squirrely eyes. What are you doing? So,
My goodness, when I would do lectures to introduce it, mm-hmm. back then,
yeah,
I would have people stand up, call me a witch, and leave.
How do you respond to an accusation like that? Do you float? Do you sink? I mean, it's a Monty Python skit.
I just, this is what I thought. You know, the other people were listening and said, you know, it's not for you. Good. See you later. Bye. All right. You know, I would attract the people that I could help.
Has that changed over the years? Because I've seen massive shifts in, I got into homeopathy back then, and I had never heard homeopathy. And some people would look at that as, oh, that's the medicine of the devil. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? It hurts no one, harms no one. And you're talking about the drug you're taking can kill people. And that's, I was perspective at that moment. But I think things have changed. These kind of, even our discussion on this topic, maybe 20 years ago, might not have happened so easily. And it's still, I have sensitivity to it because I know there are a wide variety of beliefs in my audience and I respect them. And I want people to be uplifted by all of these conversations, not in any way denigrated. And so none of the discussion is meant to do that, nor is your book meant to do that. But I find the topics and discussions fascinating.
No, I mean, back then I must have had just a duck, stuff rolls off my back because it didn't bother me a bit. And I come from a family of independent business people. So, you know, you had to market a lot and I didn't mind. And I learned a lot about myself doing it. And I saw over the years, just so many people changing the way they look at me, the way they look at hypnotherapy or coaching. And, you know, now it's just, you know, mushroomed into a whole different kind of thing where, you know, it's cool to have a life coach, where back then it was not cool.
Yeah. So you've transition seamlessly into the, you know, how they call it something different, but you were kind of already doing these things years ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Now, how often does this topic come up as something that is maybe really helpful to people? Because, you know, as I said, it's still a bridge too far to consider some of these concepts of having lived before in a different body, right? We have a materialistic reductionist view often of the world. I talk about it in medicine, but even in our living reality, we look at the body and we mistaken this body as ourself, that this is who we really are, as opposed to something we inhabit while we're here.
Right. I do talk about that. I try to focus the beginning of the book to say, this is where I'm coming from. You don't have to believe this. If you want to continue reading, go ahead, you know, but I'm going to cover all of it. You know, the premise is that I am soul. You are soul. We don't have a soul. We are having here a spiritual experience, but in a physical body. And if you don't want to read anymore, great. If you do, keep going. And you're going to get tools for your daily life, where I think what my book may be different than a lot of people's that talk about esoteric stuff is they leave it in an esoteric place. They don't bring it down to say, what's in it for me? How can it help my daily life? And why should I even listen to it if it's not going to help my daily life? My daily life is pretty darn hard. And that is what the whole book focus is, how it's going to impact your daily life right here, right now.
Marion, hold your book up so everybody can see it. We'll have it linked up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. There it is. Miracles is the book. And, you know, we always like miracles, but think sometimes that they don't occur anymore. And I found in my life miracles almost every day, but maybe they're not so grandiose like people think they have to be. Perhaps, you know, maybe there's a technique you have to help people identify the miracles in their life, no matter what they believe.
Well, that is also in my book. Yeah, there's big ones and little ones, and you know, the nudges, and like as a good friend of mine calls now, woo-woo moments. You know, it's like this is a woo-woo moment, and like, wow, okay, So you start to have the consciousness to be aware of the little miracles, the big miracles. Some, you know, hit you over the head, and some just kind of sneak in like a little pussycat, you know, but you have the awareness to know that it's sneaking in like a little pussycat.
Right. So is there, like, say, a particular technique that can help people recognize, as I said, small or big miracles, whatever, but that the miracle concept, because, you know, it's a big title there on your book, miracles. It's like, if we remember reading it from Orthodox views of religion, whether it be Christianity, Judaism, whatever, we think biblical, and it's like unfathomable, right? But I found, as I said, miracles can be just the smallest little things. You know, it could be something like you described earlier at 10, where you get this voice, get on the bed now so you don't get shot and killed in this life by your brother accidentally, which you could say, that's a miracle. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, right? I would definitely say that's a miracle.
But what other miracles could occur that are not so grandiose that maybe there's a practice or a technique? I don't know. I don't want you to blow the whole book out for everybody now, but maybe there's something you can
share. No,
there's
a tremendous amount of stories in the book. Mm-hmm. And that's the feedback that I've gotten. I think people like to hear stories. It's not just my stories. It's other people's stories. There's miracle people's stories in there. They've been saved. They've been aware of different things. I can say one of the things that I do consistently now, I talked about as a Buddhist, I worked with a mantra. The mantra I use now is Hu. It's an ancient name for God. And it connects me, it feeds me, and it helps me to feel more divine love and helps my awareness to, you know, it's like different music, you know, can put you on edge, or different music can just open your heart. When you sing the word Hu, at least for me, my heart opens more and I'm more aware of spirit that is always flowing and I'm able to catch it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've talked about the Hu here as a sound, an ancient sound. And, you know, growing up Jewish, I've referenced my bar mitzvah before I knew a lot of these stuff consciously, that they use these words, sacred words, words of God, and even chanted and sung them, that there was a vibration associated with it that would open us up. So it wasn't such a foreign concept to me, but many times, you know, we can divide ourselves in terms of Eastern philosophy and Western philosophy. And I don't know that there is a distinct difference other than how we would describe it, but these sounds exist beyond philosophies and even cultures. They're sounds, they're energy, vibration. As a homeopath, I understand that. And it doesn't matter whether you speak Chinese or English or French or whatever, the remedy that I would select, if it matches what you need, it doesn't matter your culture, your background, if you're a male or a female. So there's things that are sort of universal in their application. And this is where I would say, for anybody from any background or belief system, if you can utilize some of the tools and techniques that Marianne has brought out in her book, all to your betterment, including strengthening your own faith and belief as it exists today. Would you say that would be accurate?
Oh, totally. I would not say to blindly believe anything that I say or anybody else. If something may be like, oh, this sounds kind of interesting, try it. See what happens to you as you do it and see if it resonates with you. And if it doesn't, fine. You know, in my book, I talk about dreams. Dreams help us. That's a connection, an interconnection at night to spirit. Some people dream very vividly. Some people don't. That's fine. There's other tools in there too. But it's not a one-stop shop for anybody, because everybody has a different state of awareness.
Mm-hmm. Going on the topic of reincarnation again, I'm asking this kind of a broader question, but if you can remember, you know, even one instance of where a knowledge of something like that changed a person's perspective, where they felt maybe victimized or somehow their life was not going the right direction, and then they had a realization of something that broadened their perspective on life, that it changed them almost in a moment, that they didn't feel so overwhelmed or even victimized by something they were going through.
Yeah, I can't speak for anybody else. I know that when I was going through a bad marriage, and I kept asking spirit, why? Why am I going through this? I didn't want to be a victim, but I felt like a victim. And I had a dream where it was more than a dream. It was a past life experience where I had this book with like maybe 12 pictures on each page, and it was maybe 20 pages. And each picture represented, and it was a knowing of a life with that ex-husband. And it was like, wow, okay, that's great, but how is that going to help me? And then I kept asking, and I got another dream where the origins of our relationship and the problem of the relationship started thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, where he saved me from being a slave. And I made a decision, a wrong decision at that time, to take on inappropriate responsibility for him. And that's what I was living through in this life. And once I got that from the dream, and that it was a past life reoccurrence, I was able to stop my actions and grow from that awareness.
How did that change the nature of that relationship? Was it no longer needed? Was the lesson learned? Or how would you describe what happened next?
Well, I can only speak for me. The lesson was learned for me. We were incredibly close because we had like many, 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 many lifetimes. And I knew that if I kept doing what I was doing, I wasn't going to learn my lesson in this lifetime. And learning my lesson, I was enabling him not to grow and keeping myself from growing. So whether he understood that or not, I couldn't make that decision for him. But when I made the decision to divorce because and not take responsibility for him, just helped me to grow in leaps and bounds. And that would, I guess, would make him force himself to take responsibility for himself. But it wasn't going to be me taking his responsibility.
So in this particular relationship, in this lifetime, it wasn't something you can overtly talk to him about. He wasn't open perhaps to the here's what I discovered. This is why this is happening. And this is what I need to do. I mean, was that part of the equation?
At that time, it was not part of the equation for him because he was very vested in me, whether he realized it or not, in me taking responsibility.
Playing that role, right?
Right. I mean, I was raised that way. I mean, I was taking responsibility for everybody in my family at 10 years old. Yeah, it was something I stepped into very easily.
Yeah. The pattern was set, but it's fascinating. Now, I know some people will interpret what Marion's saying is either a dream in and of itself or some who have a perspective. And again, this is the widest way we can believe these things. The experience is the experience for Marion. She's not trying to convince you of it, except to share it with her, with us, so we can see, hey, how did she evolve to believe what she believes and how has it helped her? But, you know, some might perceive, Marion, that, well, that was an experience before you got here and you can have these spiritual experiences. It wasn't necessarily an incarnation in another body. Again, whatever people believe, it doesn't bother me, probably doesn't bother you, but I thought, take it for the help that it might provide to you, however you perceive it or interpret
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's, I don't want to try to ram anything down anybody's throat, but if they're inclined to read the book and something, again, like I said, resonates with them, try it. Just see what happens. You know, it's not someone trying to convince you. You are on your own journey.
Mm-hmm. So are you planning to go out with this book and speak public events and things like that? Or is it more or less like we're doing interviews on the book now? It's coming out. It's available, I think, right now as well. So,
Yeah. I mean, the second week it was out, it went to number two on Amazon.
Awesome. So, that's really great. Is this topic so interesting to people, or was there a massive publicity campaign? That's pretty amazing.
No, there was no massive publicity campaign. I listened about the sub. Okay, this was another inner guidance. Okay, so I went through a kind of a period of like lessening of creativity last year and just felt kind of like disconnected, like, nothing. You know, I'm kind of semi-retired and it's just kind of like, nothing's really gelling. And so I kept working inwardly to find out what I needed to do. And then all of a sudden I heard, write another book. I went, no, I don't want to write another book. I don't like writing. Write another book. I was like, oh. And then I kept seeing and being aware of a tremendous interest in these two subjects, karma and reincarnation. And what I also noticed is I think you and I grew up in a time when there wasn't the pull of social media.
No. Yeah,
which keeps you outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we're on social media now to talk about this, but it can be so polarizing of going within to find out what's really going within your own self. And so in a contemplation, I mean, I just saw the whole thing of miracles. I was mm-hmm. like, whoa, okay. So that's when I started to write it again. And then it was like, wow, it's not nearly as big as the other books, but people don't have the focus as they used to, and the attention span.
Yeah.
And so it is a concise book, but it's packed. Mm-hmm. It's definitely packed. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Oh, it's all helpful. I appreciate it. I mean, I'm just throwing these things out. Nothing is scripted here, which is what I liked about these Sunday conversations. They allow it to just evolve organically. And you said about going within or going within yourself. You know, some people may interpret that as like a self-worship. You know, is it worshiping your ego? What is it? Or is there a distinction between that? Because ego, we know, is a trap for anybody at any time. If you have this body that we're in, and how do we, you know, navigate that? And maybe describe it maybe a little differently for those that might misinterpret what you're saying.
What I see for myself out there, and I talk about this, I mean, I even write it on the back cover. There's a hunger for something in life that social media, the material stuff is not fulfilling people. When I say go within, it means to connect with what I call spirit or the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. and to connect with yourself as spirit, soul, okay. your true self, not the ego. And you need the ego on this level, but you don't want to have that as the driver. And that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. As a child, I always listened inwardly. There was not the draw of social media to take me out of that listening to spirit. And most people find it very difficult to even sit and be quiet for 3 to 5 minutes, much less, you know, do some more inner work. So I try to make it easy for them and give them some different tools to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when clients come to me and I do a hypnotic MP3, which is basically, you know, visualizing and going within, it's a guided meditation. It's transformative for people because they're not used to doing that.
And how do you, I guess, bridge the gap for those that come in with preconceived notions about how they can connect to spirit? Because, you know, you might be providing something just new and very unusual for them, maybe a little intimidating or maybe frightening. Is there a way to overcome fear when it comes to this kind of practice or experience?
Well, the clients that come to me, and I communicate the same way I'm communicating now. If they're afraid, I said, well, you don't have to be afraid. You can just say, I'm safe to feel safe. And really, spirit is all about love. It's not about fear. It's not about anything negative. It's how to connect more with love for yourself and for life itself. And they understand that. And I said, these are some tools to connect more and more and to really feel that and to be more of love.
Well, that vitamin L comes back again and again, love, right?
Right.
The most powerful force. I shared the story a few weeks ago when we were heading to Denver for a spiritual retreat type weekend. It was Easter weekend. And my wife and I were heading out of town, and she was heading up the escalator to the second concourse. I was leading the way. She was right behind me. And we got off the escalator at the top. I heard a giant thud behind me, and I heard people gasp. I turned around to see my wife on the ground. She had fallen, tripped. And apparently that I didn't know what would happen at that point, but she fell down, and what broke her fall was her face. If you can imagine, you know, normally you catch yourself with your hands. And it's like, no, she couldn't. It was so fast. And yeah, I looked at her. There was a little bit of mark, but nothing was broken. It was like, talk about a miracle. There was explanation in physics to say how that happened. Now, as this experience, the spiritual experience, has continued through the weekend, you know, I'm the MC of this event on the final day. And I talked about the miracle of love, how love is a more powerful force than anything, and that love, the law of love, is even more powerful than the law of karma. We talk about cause and effect.
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly.
And she described to me, as she was thinking about what happened, and she says, honey, I tripped over my own baggage. You know, that was, again, a spiritual revelation of the things we carry with us, karmic burdens, debts, beliefs, right, patterns, habits that are not constructive, but maybe destructive at this point we no longer need. And given an opportunity to, well, karmically pay a debt of some kind, but at the same time, the law of love allowed her to have the experience without it being devastatingly shattering to her, you know, entire face and eyes. I mean, it was like a miracle. And so I talk about love. You mentioned love. That's what brings that story back up to me, how the law of love can be more powerful than even the debt you might owe. And then we get into some really controversial discussions of the concept of a savior, right? Because if we think about living again and again and again, some have brought up, even in this audience, to say, well, then I wouldn't need a quote unquote savior. And that's an interesting thing, because, you know, whole faiths are built upon a savior, you know, and this goes back thousands of years to other religions besides Christianity. And you know, I don't want to, I'm not attempting to change anybody's belief system or religion, nor are you. When we talk about these things, these are to share our journeys, hopefully to uplift if people are at a place where they're going, well, something's not working, right? So how do we describe that law of love, law of karma? How do they work together in having these experiences so that I believe we can grow spiritually?
Well, I think you just said it. I don't know what else to say. You did a really good job of that. I mean, it is about love. Karma is really teaching you about love. Mm-hmm. And yes, there's some, in my belief system, there are things that you may have to address, but if you have that love, you probably won't shatter your face. You probably will have it a bit more mild than you would have if you didn't have that love in your heart, or working on having it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you said it so well, Robert.
Well, I was just trying to ask a question and somehow it came through.
No, you did great.
Well, these are the things that have always fascinated me in my journey as well. I was always a seeker as well, asking all the questions of all, you know, I would ask the rabbis, the priests, the anybody I could ask. It didn't matter what religion they were, the Buddhists. I just wanted to know. I was so curious, right? And so it led me to, you know, a path of experience and a path of love, or divine love, that is non-judgmental, recognizing that we do have to make judgments every day. How we, you know, do we go right or left? Do we go down that dark alley or not? So, you know, all judgment is not bad. Discrimination is not bad. But the idea of recognizing each other as spiritual beings, that's a challenge, because we see a lot of horrible things that we might even call evil doing or evil doers. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do you look at them and recognize them as soul or as sparks of God, creations as well? And how would that impact the way we'd interact with them? Not to be victimized by them if they are doing or engaging in bad behavior, but maybe to spark some kind of uplift where there wasn't before.
Right. I don't think it's possible personally to have that warm love for everyone, but you can have that divine love for people and have healthy boundaries, mm-hmm. you know, and not allow yourself to be abused in any way. But what I try to do throughout the day is just to send love, agape, to people, you know, that divine love, and let spirit send it out as it so wishes. And I think that elevates life just by doing that, because that's a different cause than going, ooh,
Yeah.
I don't like that person.
Well, I had an experience like this with the animal kingdom moment recently. I went out in the morning go to the greenhouses, open them up. And, you know, I had taken some plants out because it's the transition season from cold to warm and you got to play around with temperatures and such. So I'm out there looking at the plants and suddenly my attention was caught in about, I don't know, maybe about 20, 30 feet away from me was this large black dog staring at me in my own backyard. I'm like, I don't know this dog. And it looked like a scary beast. And I'm like, my wife and I, we're not dog people. We love dogs and animals, but you know how it is. You gravitate. We're kind of cat people. We understand cats.
Oh, I'm a cat person too.
Yeah. So, I mean, you always get the battle between the dog people and cat people. That's not what I'm trying to say here, but you know, dog energy, cat energy, it's different. And I'm like looking at this dog and now we're staring at each other. Cause I'm just like startled that it's there. It's like, I can't run fast enough to get back to the house.
No,
I know that. I've assessed that. And yet my momentary, you know, fear or panic that I could have gone down said, calm your energy, just relax, look at the dog and, you know, just give it love. And it looked at me and it growled and rawr, like that once. And then it just started walking over to me, but not in a menacing way. I was still honestly a little bit nervous because I, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen, but I just remained calm. It came, it just sniffed my hand and let me pet it. And then it just kind of moved on. But it's one of those challenges in life that I think that, you know, if you call it a curveball, that I think we're challenged spiritually to how are you going to act or react in these situations that may be even dangerous for you? And the opportunity to not fall prey to fear. And I'm not saying, again, go down that dark alley where people are known to get shot and mugged or anything like that. But sometimes you find yourself in a perfectly seemingly innocent place like your own backyard, and you're challenged to go, what do I do? You know, and your relationship with spirit is on the line right then.
If I saw a big spider, I think I'd be running though. Just saying.
Well, back when I was in Georgia, you know, in Stone Mountain, it happened when we just had our first child then, and he was a baby, and I was out at the blueberry bushes picking blueberries, and I looked down between my legs on the ground was a coiled up copperhead snake. You want to talk about jumping backwards like Michael Jordan couldn't even do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a place for everything. You know,
it's like survivability. But then I gathered myself together, I gathered my courage, and I safely saved it by putting it in our trash can and called a herpetologist to pick it up. And, you know, it was one of those things after the fear, what do you do? And I felt a little bit like the crocodile hunter in that moment that I survived something so amazing. But again, that's what I'm saying. Life is like that. And I think it puts us to the test. How well are we practiced in the communication with divine spirit, divine love, to be able to, even in dangerous situations, not only survive them, but to come out and have a story to tell that could be helpful to others. And I sense that's what's going on in your book, Miracles.
Very much so. And there's a lot of stories. I don't want to tell them all.
Yes,
but
I know.
Yes, there are. Get the book.
Yeah.
Find out for yourself. And there's all kinds of stories, not just from me. Mm-hmm. There are dream stories from other people. There are daily stories from other people. There are reincarnation stories from other people besides myself. And it's a lot of fun because I think people like stories, and these are all true.
So how did you get the stories from other people? Did you say, hey, I'm writing a book. Do you have a story about reincarnation, or was it?
That's exactly what I did.
Really?
Yes. And I said that the criteria for this was that you have to give me a story, and only you will be allowed to give me the story for the book. If you believed in reincarnation, not from a book or not from TV or anything else, but from your own personal experience.
Mm.
And that's the criteria for the stories in the book.
Wow. That's kind of wild.
Because, I mean, everybody's heard of reincarnation now, not when I was growing up or as a kid.
Right.
And so that was not the criteria. There's many people I know that, I kind of believe that anyway. And then I read a book and, you know, I kind of, you know, was in alignment with it. That would not have gone in the book.
Wow.
These are stories that had to have happened to them that had nothing to do with the book, nothing to do with YouTube, nothing to do with TV or movie or anything. from their own awareness.
I remember reading a book, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls. Was that Michael Newton?
Yes. In fact, I talk about him in the book.
Yeah, because what was fascinating about him as a therapist of some kind, I don't remember if he was a psychologist, whatever, but he began uncovering in his patient population stories of the journey between lifetimes of what was going on. And I had read books on reincarnation, plenty, but I had never heard of a book about, hey, this is what's going on in between. And I thought that was a fascinating thing.
Well, that's one of the books that I reference in my book. Mm-hmm. So that can be interesting for them too.
Excellent. All right. Well, now as we wrap up here, we got another minute or so. Marian, it's great to see you again. Nice to connect, and congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
I would hope to connect with you out there in the world sometime. Do you have any events that you're speaking at besides, or anything on the calendar?
I have another podcast, but it's like yours. They kind of record them and then put them on. But if people could, they can reach me on Facebook or Instagram. And Instagram is Marian, M-A-R-I-A-N underscore Massey, M-A-S-S-I-E.
Okay.
And so I'm always giving tips and things like that. So that would be, might be something that they might want to do.
Okay. But you don't have a personal website then?
I do. You know, like, I am kind of semi-retired.
Okay.
So, yes, marianmassey.com is my website.
Gotcha.
And I don't mind taking on clients, but I have lots of different things going on, and I'm kind of focusing on the book and not so much personal clients. So,
no worries. Well, Marian Massey, her new book, Miracles, Karma and Reincarnation Redefined, A Handbook for Purposeful Living. And you can reach her on Facebook and Instagram if you got questions beyond that. And great to reunion with you here on this topic.
Oh, same here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you know what? The power to heal, even spiritually, is yours.